Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
We know weight loss drugs are radically and rapidly changing the treatment for obesity, but now research shows these drugs could have huge health benefits for everyone, potentially delaying age-related illnesses, halving heart attack deaths, and almost halving the risk of obesity-related cancers. Professor Donal O'Shea, the HSE's National Clinical Lead for Obesity, joins me on the line now. Good morning to you, Donal.
Morning, Claire.
Thanks for being with us. So there was this conference that happened with people like you attending in Malaga this week. You're just back from it and you say it was not like any other obesity conference you've been to. Why?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Claire, we've not had meaningful treatments for obesity up until the last couple of years. So 10, 15 years ago, you were at smaller meetings where there was a lot of people going on about the eat less, move more, how do you do it, gastric band, gastric balloon. And you walk into this conference and there was 5,000 people specialising in obesity there. There was a major presence from pharma. And there were, you know, 5 parallel tracks presenting on different aspects of preventing and treating obesity, and a buzz that I've never experienced at an obesity meeting.
I mean, going by the headlines in the papers today, the drugs are being portrayed as almost like a miracle solution to many of today's most serious health issues, you know, never mind obesity.
Yeah, now, I mean, that's an exuberant response. And you know, what has happened is they've taken results from clinical trials, which study the highest risk patients. And in the kind of setting of a clinical trial, which is incredibly rigorous. And then they take those exciting results and apply them to the population. And you can't do that simply. You know, these newer drugs need, when they come out, they need to be on the market for 5 or 6 years before we know about their full safety profiles, etc. But there is no doubt these drugs and approaches are innovative. It's a bit like blood pressure was in the 1970s there, when we didn't have very many treatments and we were only treating people with really high blood pressure. And then we gradually understood it better, got better treatments. And then what happened is you had very successful treatment of the extreme blood pressures, but you realized actually it's important to treat blood pressure in everybody. And that's where obesity will go over the next 40 years. And we will see uses for these treatments outside of obesity in other diseases, like cancer, which has been studied very closely now, with the GLPs helping cancer outcome independent of any effect on weight.
So in general terms, do you support that assessment that the drugs could have very significant health benefits for everyone?
I think that's too broad a statement to be making at this point. I think it's an unprecedented time in the obesity field. You can have that vision and goal to work to. But the problem when we make progress in medicine is everyone wants to jump to the end game, where there's benefits to everyone. You know, there was talks about, you know, will we be putting statins, the cholesterol treatment, in the water? Should everybody be on them? And you know, the answer is clearly no. Should everybody be on these treatments? The answer is clearly no. They don't work for everyone. They have side effects. But we are standing in a very different place now within the obesity field than we were even 5 years ago.
Now, there are experts in the UK calling on the NHS to accelerate the use and the availability of these drugs. Should we be having that conversation here, or are you more cautious?
We need to expand their use. The World Health Organization came and visited Ireland earlier in the year with their Accelerate to Stop Obesity vision. And they're asking every country to look not just at the prevention piece, because the WHO were all about prevention, but actually now that we have access to treatment, we have to start using those treatments. And initially in people who will clearly benefit the most, And then you widen their availability.
Okay, and I'll talk about the people who will benefit the most in a moment. But just going back to what we're talking about today, these wider health benefits that might be there. Is there a problem here in giving these medications? Let's say a medic decided, well, my patient is at risk of having a heart attack and I'm going to use one of these drugs to help treat that or prevent that. If that person is of a normal weight, will that drug result in them losing weight that they don't need to lose, or how would that be managed?
Yeah, so with this class of drug, the benefits, say, for heart disease beyond weight loss are the anti-inflammatory benefits. And the dose at which you get your anti-inflammatory benefit is very much lower than the dose you need to be on for weight loss. Mm-hmm. And what needs to be studied over the next couple of, I'm going to say decades, is exactly that. At what dose do you get the effect that reduces cancer? At what dose do you get the effect that reduces inflammation? Because you do not want people losing weight on a weight loss dose when they are either already struggling with their weight or maybe even underweight.
Yes, and that is something that will have to be managed. But as you say, a lower dose might be the answer. I have a message here from someone who calls himself a concerned mum. The weight loss drug is not that easy to get, as you've just spoken about. My son qualifies, he's 26 stone, but his doctor says that due to a supply shortage, he'll only give him a prescription when he is pre-diabetic or diabetic. That seems like shutting the stable door after the horse has bolted. I wonder, does access depend on location and or doctor?
Well, access does depend on your GP being prepared to prescribe it. And a lot of GPs won't have yet prescribed it and won't be comfortable prescribing it. At the moment, it's only, if you like, reimbursed for individuals who are at a particular weight and have prediabetes. Other than that, you're having to pay for it. And the cost of these drugs is significant. So at the moment, the GLP-1s will cost about between 150 and 300 euro a month in Ireland. For the same dose of the same drug in America, that cost is $1,500, $1,600.
Oh yes, Donald Trump was making that point when he was talking about what he was going to do about pharma in the last couple of days. It's very expensive in the States.
It's way too expensive in the States. And if you go to somewhere like Egypt, the same drug is available for 80 or 90 euro.
Mm-hmm. So here it is cost, isn't it? That's what is holding us back.
Cost is now the bigger issue than supply. I think both the companies that have launched GLPs in this country, Novo Nordisk and Lilly, are confident in their supply.
I have a listener here who says, I'm 47, my BMI is 44, I'm on Mount Jaro since the 30th of March, so very recently, and this person has lost 11 kilos since then. I've no food noise for the first time in my life, I'm eating healthily, for me it's a lifesaver. I'm a nurse, I've tried everything, I've lost and gained on repeat for years, I now have more energy, but the food noise stopping is groundbreaking for me. And I'm sure you're familiar with many stories like that one, where this has just changed things for people.
Yeah, and I think food noise is something that people have become more aware of with these treatments, because the food noise has just suddenly stopped for, and you know, about a third of people will respond like that listener and have a very good response and start losing weight quickly. That's not everybody's story, but that food noise being switched off is life-changing for people in whom it's a problem. And it's something we used to see a little bit in patients post-bariatric surgery. You know, they'd wake up the morning after their operation and they would kind of look around to go, oh, where's that gone? So because and they didn't realise they'd had it all their life.
And the food noise is literally the food calling to you to come and consume more.
It is that part of your brain that craves energy, you know, asking you to go get energy. And therefore you're thinking about, well, what am I going to have for breakfast? What will my snack in the middle of the morning be? And then that leads ultimately to dysregulated eating, and there was huge evidence presented at the Congress over the last few days showing that that calories in, calories out relates to weight gain and weight loss. That is dead in the water. It is way more complicated than that. There are people who can eat the same amount, exercise the same amount. This was an identical twin study, living in the same house, and one twin is 18 kilos heavier than the other twin.
Mm-hmm. So was there a consensus amongst your colleagues and your peers at this conference that this is the answer?
No, there wasn't consensus. There was excitement. I think people are still processing the implications of what we saw, which was much broader and exciting than people were expecting even going to the meeting. And now we need to kind of settle down. Drugs cannot be the answer to the obesity epidemic. They can be part of the answer. There was very good evidence presented about the online marketing of food to kids and how that drives unhealthy patterns of food consumption. There was very good evidence about how the ultra-processed calories are handled totally differently by the body, drive insulin, which in turn drives hunger. So you're more hungry more shortly after an ultra-processed calorie than you are after an apple. And we have to keep all of those things front and centre with our policymakers, because the food and drinks industry are very good at doing their job. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the cabinet deciding to shelve plans to ban energy drinks for under 16s. You know, that's a simple, stupid option. We should be doing it. And they're just saying, we won't bother.
Well, I think the decision is delayed because they're going to have another public consultation. And I know that Chris Macy from the Irish Heart Foundation was on Morning Ireland this morning saying much the same as you, is completely puzzled as to why that would happen. But I suppose what you're saying is it's not enough to deal with the symptoms here. You've still got to deal with the root cause. And we can't all say to ourselves, well, I'll just eat less of the rubbish food so that it won't have an impact on my health. Really, we should be just not having a lot of that stuff that you've just mentioned.
You know, the ultra-processed foods absolutely drive the body towards wanting to consume more and more often. And I think, you know, people need, I think, to be aware of that and need to be aware then of the environment that is driving their kids to choose those options from the age of 3 in a really targeted way. And we have to do everything we can to change that environment. The other evidence we saw at that conference was the real powerful impact of calorie posting on menu boards. And that's something that 3 ministers for health have agreed to legislate for. And it has never happened because industry have very successfully said, well, we need a bit more consultation. We need a bit more discussion.
Mm-hmm. But it does work, is what you're saying. Donal, we'll leave it there. And thank you very much for talking to us. That's Professor Donal O'Shea, the HSE's National Clinical Lead for Obesity.